does the speaker feel the fact that, whereas I would agree with his point about, you know, we can't unite with other organisations, etc., does he feel the fact that there may be people in the various organisations like the SWP, the Labour Party, who could in some sense be called socialists, in as much as they do actually have some, adherence to belief in a kind of society where we believe that we're confused by all sorts of, if you like, impedimenta in a way?
Well, I'm not too sure about that. In terms of organisations, I think obviously the party have got to put forward this view that people in all of these organisations will hopefully come round to the socialist case, and that those people have got to be got at, if you like. With regard to them being socialists in those organisations, it's extremely difficult. I wonder what they're doing in that organisation if they are socialists. Where is the socialist content in their magazines and their articles? Where is the socialism in the content of their propaganda? I don't see it in the SWP's paper, for example, or any of their papers. This talk about a moneyless worldwide society, a society that's not based upon leaders, a society which is free and democratic. I don't see it. Don't see those comments coming from those papers, but that's not to say that there aren't people in those political organisations that are not amenable to socialism. Of course they are. Yeah.
I think that's more or less it's just that, you see, the trouble with a lot of these organisations is that a lot of what they say is sort of goes almost the whole way, but not quite.
Which one, Sam?
Well, I mean, let's put it this way. The SWP are very strong at talking about the difference between revolutionary organisations and reformist ones. Now, I don't hear the same emphasis coming from, say, members of the Communist Party that I've spoken to. That I might just be unlucky in this respect. I did associate with members of the Edinburgh branch of IS, as it was then, or about 10 or 11 years ago, because I was staying with my cousin who was in that organisation. I did have a lot of contact with them. And they were very strong in all this business about reformism and revolutionary politics and all that. But it always seemed, there always seemed to be a sort of twist and turn sort of mentality. You know, they did in some sense believe in a world society, you know, about money and all that. But they seemed to view as, the problem seemed to be that they were confused about what was realistic and what wasn't. You know, it wasn't realistic to advocate this to workers who seemed to be, you always have the workers as if these people weren't workers. It didn't seem to be sensible to advocate to them because, you know, they weren't sort of ready for it or they weren't capable of understanding it or there was some difficulty in the road. And, you know, it's like the question of the straw that breaks the camel's back. You know, there seem to be sometimes there seemed to be such a sort of thin line, but it was a line that had to be crossed. And, I mean, I just wonder how many people in these organisations have, in some sense, crossed that line and are remaining in them for various confused reasons.
I hope I didn't give the impression that I was being sectarian in the sense that I wouldn't have anything to do with these people, wouldn't associate with them, wouldn't have a sort of a dialogue with them. I think that we must do that. We must speak to these people and do it in a friendly manner. I don't think that we should remain aloof and isolated, but the question that I was trying to deal with tonight was, should we actually organise together in a political organisation? And I think that the question to that must be no. But
anyone else? Gentleman on my left.
This apartheid question, it's a strong one, isn't it? I mean, when an anti-apartheid member, this organisation comes up to me and says, look, this is what's going on, it's terrible. It's difficult to say. I would like you to comment on it. Yes, but what's needed is socialist consciousness. And that's what we must work to achieve in South Africa. Because, and would you say this is why a lot of left-wing organisations are agitating for democracy? We, of course, would like to see democracy, but they're agitating for that now, above all else. Because they're interested in running capitalism, is that right? What do you think?
Well, if they are starting to agitate for democracy, perhaps they should start with their own organisations. Because, I mean, internally, these organisations are not democratic. The leadership is one thing, but the rank and file members are something else, and that they're not organised on democratic basis. They're based on this sort of Leninist principle of democratic centralism. But I understand what you're saying. The question remains, I think, that even if there wasn't a socialist party, it would still have to be an organisation like us, putting the case, undiluted, if you like, for socialism. But saying that these problems can only really be solved by socialism. If the SPGB doesn't do that, who's going to do it? Come back if that is, you know, I don't suppose that's satisfactory. But...
Sorry, there's someone at the back.
Yes. I think I've got a book. Here is a capital towards various problems, capital towards various problems. The important for the reference organization is going to be the dialogue, and these reforms usually have been like CND and the people bring peace and people like that as well. And even the organization is largely supported by the executive group, really in Rome. And I think that this study, they couldn't become front down in this.
You're saying that version? The various left-wing groups in this country associate with various single-issue campaigns, that type of thing. Yeah, I mean, they must do that. That's the way they operate. They work on this sort of reformist basis, and so they like to get onto the reformist bandwagon, which are whatever issues are going. So at one particular stage in our history, it will be CND, another time it will be ecology, and there will be something else. Was it sort of a contribution more than a question? Is that an answer to it?
Who's asking the questions and who's answering here? If there are any non-socialist party members who'd like to ask anything, even a general question, we'd be quite happy to help you out there. If you don't necessarily want to speak directly on what has been said by Brian tonight, we're quite prepared to open out the discussion.
Because there is a political party, what is the Communist Party? Which is also the left wing authorities government in the nation, because it's no political group or political party.
No. Thank you.
Do you want to come back in that time? No, I think we'll say that we have your question.
Coming back on that second thing. I mean, it's a difficult thing to... should we align ourselves with organisations which wish to establish democracy, you know, political democracy in countries? Or should we say no, because what's needed, first and foremost, is socialist consciousness. But then they would say, well, helping to establish political democracy would aid the flow and allow for the free association for socialists. So this is paramount, according to them. So we should unite with them on this basis. But no, apparently we don't. We say they've got to form their own organisation under their own conditions. Don't get involved in reforming the system as such, because then you get involved with the administration of capitalism. Or you could get lost in that. That's what we say, I think. Do you agree?
Well, I don't know what the Socialist Party at its current chief could actually do in terms of its size in helping these groups anyway. I, once again, I'll return to the same point, really, that the Socialist Party continues to exist, really, to put forward the case for socialism. What effect do you think that would actually have if the Socialist Party joined one of these big organisations in support of democratic rights in some part of the world? I mean, of course we're in favour of democracy, but what actual, in terms of effect, what effect would that have apart from the fact that it would water down our case? And we're not opposed to, obviously we're not opposed to countries developing their own democratic institutions. They're only limited democratic institutions, aren't they?
What if we were 20,000 strong? Would that change the situation?
Well, I think that would be more indication to carry on with the Socialist case. Because then we'd really start to see what was happening, because we'd start to become sort of a powerful organisation in this country. And hopefully in other parts of the world.
And also more internationally aware trade unions, maybe.
We have a question there from the middle of the floor.
Well, it's not really a question, it's a contribution, really.
A condition.
On that last point, I meant with a condition here, but being as Socialist Party as I am, and working for federal rights, because what we're talking about is the corruption of left-wing reforms, which are the form of capitalism. I think struggle for political rights is completely different. That's not a form of capitalism as such. That's giving us more freedom to discuss our ideas within capitalism that could assist in abolishing it. And I think it would be quite important for the Socialist Party as a party to get involved in South Africa, because what we should be concerned about is socialism and nothing but. That's what the party is about. But there's nothing wrong with individuals working outside the party, working within our trade unions, for instance, in helping people in South Africa or other countries that need to strike for political rights, and I personally do that. I think we should do that, yeah. But I don't think it's a left-wing reform of capitalism as such, because it's not really a reform of the system, it's just an aid to the working class within capitalism as it stands as such.
So you would support the anti-apartheid movement?
In a sense. In a sense, but in a very restricted sense. I mean, I would certainly make my point and want to be as democratic as possible. You know, if you're going to give support on an individual basis, I think you've got to make sure that you keep the socialist principles to the fore and not let yourself be easily led by bodies such as the anti-apartheid movement, which is very wishy-washy about how it decides its policy. It's got, you know, a leadership basis.
But in the SWP, black workers to power. What about white workers? You know, black and white workers to power. The situation in South Africa is biased, isn't it, against the black workers? The whites receive more wages, don't they?
Well, the political setup of South Africa is obviously in favour of the white people and the institutions that have evolved in that country, that have evolved around that basis, yeah. And obviously, socialists would want those organisations to be more democratic, but what we don't want is just to replace white rulers with black rulers in that particular country.
Anyone else? Sandy? Perhaps.
I think just a bit of a in any case, the Ryan Ruddy model has made part of this point by saying, what could we do as an organisation anyway if we got involved in those things? It's been perfectly clear that such change or attempt to persuade people that change is going to come about, such movements in that direction as have been actually achieved in South Africa, have been done as a response to what black workers in the country have done. And this is something that's very important to understand. I mean, first of all, the anti-apartheid groups and people like Peter Hain and one thing or another, well, they may achieve certain things like, you know, the sort of token reforms and the sporting setup and one thing or another, which are still riddled with inequities in any case. But you know, the real changes or the real sounds of change, even if it doesn't actually come about in a very concrete form, have actually been because of things like the Soweto riots, where the school children decided they were going to sort of just sit on their backsides and take it. And now the present spate of violence in South Africa, where black workers in fairly massive numbers are deciding, you know, they're fed up, they've had enough, and you know, the violence which is erupted has been pretty horrific in some cases. They've turned against their own people, those who are, or who they think are collaborating with the sort of prison regime. That's what's actually making the difference. It's not what outside groups do, how they sort of, the amount of energy that they put into it, it's what the black workers themselves are doing in South Africa, which is going to make any difference at all. Plus the fact also that it's the disillusion and disaffection of South Africa's allies, which are also going to make some difference to what South Africa does. And the question is really how long it lasts now, given these two pressures and also pressure from within the country from perhaps other groups. So, I mean, what we could do with it, what the contribution we could make would be fairly minimal, and we certainly couldn't spend the time organising as a party. I mean, I'm some sympathy with what the contributor over there said about on an individual basis there are things you can do, well, certainly there are, but obviously we as an organisation couldn't make a contribution anyway. And it would actually, you know, take away from the work of propagating the socialist case. And I said it was a week from sorry.
Gent at the back, please.
All right, people come along, they say to me, oh, we want to table a motion in favour of South Africa. Everyone puts a hand up in favour of it. But of course, you're doing that on one night of the week. The next night of the week, you're going to have to move a resolution about Poland. Because although there are sections of the left who like talking about South Africa but don't like talking about Poland, you've got hundreds of trade unionists, nay, miners, the sort of trade unionists who leftists really get excited about, in prison, in Poland. Then you could talk about Zimbabwe, which is the next door neighbour of South Africa, where strikes are illegal. And when Mugabe has said that they're going to get a one-party state before long, he actually says this quite openly. So in other words, you are going to be passing endless resolutions. And then, of course, you're going to have to pass resolutions about the British government. You're going to have to start saying, why are people put in prison, for example, in Ireland, without there being a trial? Or then you're going to have to start saying, why are people in Britain not allowed to go on strike unless certain government-imposed laws are adhered to, all this sort of thing. So in other words, when it comes to it, you are going to be endlessly spending your time trying to put the right capitalism, or alternatively, you're going to be selective, which is of course what the left are. What the left spends its time doing is selecting its favoured oppressed group. And it says, you know, we are going to look after the South Africans. Someone else is going to look after Poland. And because you get some of them running about every night of the week looking after different parts of the world, but it's impossible to do all of it. So in fact, you've only got a certain amount of energy. That is one of the good arguments against reformism. You've only got a certain amount of energy. That's why most leftists give up being leftists after about 5 years on the job. But they are knackered. Politically, it whacks you out because you are dealing with everything. You are sitting there. You are like a government. I mean, the government, of course, don't take any notice. The government pays civil servants to sit there, putting all the problems of capitalism in vials and drinking cups of tea. But if you're a reformist who is sincere about this life, you are a full-time agent. You've got to be sitting there reading the Financial Times every day, government reports, Amnesty International reports. You go barmy. And of course, that's what happens. You either go Barmy, in which case you become a left-wing leader, like Tony Clifton, or alternatively, or even Barmy, and then you become like Jerry Healy, or alternatively, you drop out of it, or you become cynical, you just become a Labour Party MP, and then you just learn, you say, right, you're getting through the council, come on MP. But the point I would like to make in relation to this question of uniting with the left is very interesting, is it not? But all of these non-sectarians of the left, I always enjoy listening to the left describe themselves as non-sectarians. They are the most sectarian bunch you'll ever meet. I mean, I will at least talk with someone I disagree with in a pub. I've only been beaten up twice in my life. Once by the National Front, by a bloke who was about 6'8" tall, who said the Pakistanis kept on beating him up. You know, his book. And another time at the Workers' Revolutionary Party at Alexandra Palace, where I went along to a rally of the Workers' Revolutionary Party, where they were putting on a play about Trotsky's 7th birthday or something, to commemorate, you know, Trotsky's second orgasm or something like that. And they gave out these membership forms. And because I wouldn't fill in the membership form, and admittedly I ripped up the membership form, and admittedly I told them where to stick the form that I'd ripped up, I wasn't only attacked, but leaving the bloody place, in fact running down the hill, to be quite honest. The Brittany thugs came after me. And I go, how did I run? When you've got six Trotskys running after you, you can run, brother. So I'll tell you this. They are the only two times in my life I've ever been beaten. I've always heard people talking, you know, everyone always talks about beating. Last week in Hyde Park, you had some bloke who thought he was a member of the IRA. I told him he could go and join the IRA. You don't need any entrance intelligence test to get in the IRA. But he was going to beat me up. You meet that every Sunday, every time you run a meeting on a street corner or in a park. People go, but these people do it. You go and talk to members of the SWP, go into one of their meetings and tell them exactly where you disagree with them, you will get threats of violence. The militant tendency down at Tollpuddle this year told one of our members that when they get to power, we're all going to be shot. I mean, that's all right, you know, we're safe. So we need to take out an insurance policy on that basis. The militant tendency stand as much chance as getting to power as you stand of, you know, exploding spontaneously, so there's no problem with that. But the fact of the matter is, these are sectarian. What is the title of tonight's meeting? Should all socialists unite? Where are they? Where are they? You've got a club, you've got whole bar, pubs in Islington, which you cannot walk in for Trotskyists. Every person, the Hemingford Arms, a pub, to our disgrace, our branch used to meet in the Hemingford Arms at one time. A pub where every single person, it was the one pub in Islington you couldn't sell the socialist standard in. You'd get threats of violence. You get people with green hair telling you that you couldn't come and sell them a standard because you were a man. You know, don't talk to me about oppression. You're a man. Don't talk to me about oppression. You're white. Don't talk to me about oppression. You're not a homosexual. You know, incidentally, to be oppressed these days, it takes a sort of a lengthy procedure. One has to, you know, it's like a sort of public school training. To become a member of an oppressed group, to satisfy the left, you've got to actually struggle quite hard to get into the oppressed group, let alone getting out of it. So the point I would put in relation to this is that it's the left who are the sectarians. Why aren't they here tonight telling us where we're wrong? The fact of the matter is, there are four letters of the alphabet which follow each other, which drive members of the left mad. Even some of them, when they've left the Communist Party, long after they've left the Communist Party and become, you know, their sort of Stalinist rest homes, SPGB. You know, they hate it. If you want to be hated in the trendiest places in London, you walk in and say, SPGB, I'm a member of the SPGB. They detest us. They won't talk to us. And in the mid-70s in Islington, they held a unity conference. A unity conference where they were going to organise one big revolutionary organisation. And a number of us went along to it. And the first person got up and said, I want to move a resolution that the unity conference says we all join the International Marxist Group, an organisation at the time of about 300 members, and everyone was going to join it. That was our idea of non-sectarianism. One of us got up and said, we're not in favour of joining it. They stand for state capitalism. We don't support it. And I said, well, in that case, get out. So that is a unity conference. I've experienced nonsense. I've got the bruises of non-sectarianism and unity. Don't believe a word of it. The only crisis, I would put it to you very simply, the crisis of the left is a crisis of imagination. They haven't got a clue. What you've got on the left are two groups of people, a very small group of leaders. And incidentally, most of them, and this is an interesting point, but I won't go into it, most of them only ever started thinking about Marxism as a result of the SPGB. Very interesting. You go through half the names are in the leadership of the non-Labour Party left today. And practically every one of them is worth listening to, got their Marxism through this movement. But one of the things is, these leaders are out to be would-be rulers. They're little tin pot dictators. You've got people like Jerry Healy, who was actually sitting up on something that resembled a throne when I saw him at Alexandra Palace. And people said, anyone can go up to him and talk to him. I said, I don't want to go out to him and talk to him. And then Tony Cliff. I once said to somebody at York University, somebody the speaker will know, the current man who's now stabbing Tony Cliff in the back, Alex Kalinikos, you know, who has got to be a left-wing intellectual with a name like, you know, you've either got to be a left-wing intellectual or you're going to have a very hard life. Alex Kalinikos, I said to him, I said, what will happen to the to the working class movement, to the revolutionary movement in Britain, when Tony Cliff dies? He said, well, that'll be it. He said, when Tony Cliff dies, the working class movement in Britain will either have to find a new leader, or that's going to be the end of it. As it happens, I'll say one thing for Alex Kalinikos. He is now making provisions to do the job for Tony Cliff. He's currently stabbing him in the back. The last conference, they tried to expel Tony Cliff and called him a headless chicken. Which, for those of you who don't speak Trotskyism, is a very serious, you know, you can call a headless chicken in a Trotskyist organisation, you're for it. So it's a crisis of imagination. The other lot are all followers. Most of the people on the left are followers. And the tragedy is that all of the cynical opportunist lies which the left tell people, these followers believe. If you talk to people on the left, you see, I'll just conclude saying this, it's an important point. You talk to someone like Tariq Ali, he's a quite intelligent sort of bloke. You know, you can afford to be intelligent when you sort of, you know, you're a millionaire, you sit there reading books all day. So he is. Or Tony Cliff. Or anything. If you talk to them, they say, look, we don't believe 90% of this crap we come out with. We just put it there to get workers in the organisation. But once the workers are in the organisation, we tell them the truth. Now, interestingly enough, if you ever go and talk to the workers in the organisation, the followers, they haven't seen through it. They haven't gone through stage two of the operation. If you talk to the followers, they will all say to you, yeah, we believe in the right to work. Yeah, we believe CND is going to get rid of the problem. In other words, it's like someone who's sort of saying, look, what we are going to do, in order to make you the most beautiful woman in the world, we're going to take this bucket of manure and put it over your head. And what happens is, they get the bucket of manure, put it over their head, forget to take it off. So what you've got are all these leftists walking around the country with manure on their head, and they've never got the socialist consciousness. No one's ever done the stage two process on them. So beware of it. You know, don't believe this. It's a crisis of imagination the left has got. But there is no significant anything.
There is quite an interesting pamphlet that's been produced about the intro. I don't know if anyone's come across it. That gives a rundown of all the different left-wing organisations, what they stand for.
Would you been stand?
Yeah, I think. Yeah, the Critical Anatomy of the British Left Groups. It's sort of quite amusing, actually. The only group it gives a sort of reasonable write-up to is the SPGP, really.
What do you
think is
the best way to talk to a person in the left-wing movement, initially? I don't think it's best to be.
You take Steve Coleman's point, it's best to sort of address him from about 200 yards away. No, I think it depends what organisation they're in and what their particular political ideas are. Sandy was making the point earlier about various left wing groups. Come near to the Socialist Party case or parts of their policy, and that's correct. And I think that as socialists, we need to look at those ideas that come near to the Socialist Party and work on those and sort of develop them, develop the logical outcome of those ideas. So I think you have to approach each organisation slightly differently, and not in a sectarian manner, as people have said. I think that you must have this dialogue with people. You must discuss these ideas with them and try to win them round to the socialist case.
When somebody says, you know, I say to them, what socialism is, they say, yes, but how do you get there? That's what they all say, in my experience. And I say, well, you get there by talking to people and relating it to their experience of what goes on in society. Mm. And they just sort of like, more or less, dismiss that and say, oh, well, no, you know, you don't talk to them openly, honestly, in as many words.
It's not only that, it's this...
How come do you talk to somebody like that and say, look, this approach isn't getting anywhere?
Yeah.
You've got to talk to them openly and straight.
it's an individual thing, obviously. But one of the things that attracts people, I'm sure, to left-wing organisations is this notion that they're continually being active, they're continually doing things, they're continually bringing socialism that bit nearer. In actual fact, as people have said, what they're doing is running around in circles, because as soon as they press down one reform, and they don't even do that, another burning question arises somewhere else. And it's only by actually replacing this system that produces all of those problems that you actually get rid of that, get rid of capitalism, and replace it with socialism.
Gentlemen in the tech shirt.
So Steve mentioned the tactics of the militant tendency. I saw what happened with that incident. I also was subjected to the same sort of treatment later on. And I was chatting to this black girl who was selling militant, and I sort of approached her and said, what have you got to offer? And so you start talking about socialism, or I started talking about socialism, and it was completely alien to her. What's this about having abolishing wages? They come around like a wasp around a jam jar to see what you've got to say, some a dissenter. And then they come back with some, we've got a transition of demands. We want minimum wages, we want to take control of the industry and this sort of rubbish. But I think, what about socialism? Have you an idea what socialism is? They haven't. Like I said, I used to sell medicine for two years, nowhere in there, I can recall this, was there anything about socialism? And they claim to be socialists, but there's nothing in there about socialism. It's all about these campaigns they launch every week, literally. Campaigns to protect young trade unionists, campaigns to protect lesbians and gays, campaigns to protect Asians and blacks. Very honourable, no doubt, but it's not getting anywhere. As Steve said, it's just they're the headless chickens running around. What's the next campaign they're going to support?
It's also related to this question of tactics, because there are tactical differences with the Socialist Party and left-wing organisations. One of the things we say is that if you want to establish a democratic type of society, you must actually go about it in a democratic manner. We don't go in for this idea of leadership. None of these organisations do that. They're all based on this sort of Leninist idea that working people need to be led to socialism. There are no leaders in the Socialist Party, and it's a democratic organisation. That's the thing that we're saying to people. You can only establish a democratic society by democratic means, if you like. You can't impose it with the barrel of a gun. You can't make people into socialists or make people live in a socialist society.
Gent at the very back.
I'm a socialist party now. I see there is a big gap between us and the working class. Now the working class produce everything, but only a small slice of the pot for themselves, and they give most of it to the now. There is an alternative, that's now the social, an alternative of free access to production. That's now the, in that system, the working class, everyone can work for themselves and keep all the production for themselves, which means prosperity and security in lifetime, and which means you have to work only one day or 2 days per week. Why the working class don't vote for that? Probably we say now because they don't understand. Because every new idea, there must be someone to provoke any new idea. Now here we are the only organization provoking and producing this idea. Now how hard we try, but we don't see now to mobilize the working class in order to put this idea in practice. Now, on a common sense, that the working class shouldn't have refused this idea, because it means security and prosperity for themselves. Now, why they don't do it? Do they don't understand it? Or because it's the fault on our side, on our side, because we don't understand how to produce it and fit it to the working class. So where is that for? Is it our own body's order? Or does the Africa, they say, no, we don't want it. We want to remain to work for other people.
Well, obviously, if I knew the answer where the Socialist Party was going wrong, then I wouldn't be sitting here. I'd probably be trying to implement it somewhere else. The point you make, I think they're not mutually exclusive. Both things can actually be happening. Some of the people we speak to don't want to know that the party case. They think that they're doing okay under capitalism. They've got a mortgage. They don't consider themselves to be members of the working class. That's one thing. The other thing that we continually need to stress is that we are a very small organisation, and what we can do is extremely limited at the moment. And I think that really is the urgent task that's facing us, to actually increase membership, increase people that are going to go out and put the socialist case to people, and then we might actually see some real results. At the moment, we're firing on just a couple of cylinders, if you like, and we still achieve a great deal. The thing that I've been reading those back copies of the Socialist Standard, and the fact that we've survived this long, you know, it is an achievement in itself, if you like. I mean, no one should be satisfied with that, but the fact that we've actually kept the socialist case going, it is an important achievement. But I think that we could make fantastic progress if we increased our membership. And how we actually do that, there's various ideas in the party, but more activity, more propaganda, more journals, all of that. But that requires members, and that's what we've got to have. We've got to have members.
Yes, the front. There's one thing that seems, I think, is very important. A lot of the members seem to get disheartened because they can't convert somebody into socialism. But if they only start the idea, it takes quite a long time to mature. Mm. And if they're satisfied with that, they don't know how much good they're doing. Mm. And this is something that they should not lose sight of.
Yeah, people do become pessimistic. I mean, the branch I'm active in the Guildford area, we've been going for a few years now, we're certainly becoming more well known in that area. But for all our efforts, we've managed to get, say, a few members recently. But the Labour Party, the pop star, what was it, Briggs? Not Briggs, that's what it was. Ace of Briggs. No, Billy Bragg came and gave a concert at the Civic Centre there. And after that meeting, lots of people were left with tears in their eyes. And 45 of them actually joined the Labour Party. But by the same token, you know, you look at that and you think, bloody hell, you know, all of our efforts, and we haven't got 45 members that easy. But that's the important point to remember. It was extremely easy, and those people, whether they will continue to go along and support the Labour Party, whether they put forward Labour Party ideas, if they can find them, I wouldn't imagine that they will. So the members that we make, and the active members we make, are extremely important, because, you know, we are an extremely active organisation for our size. And the people the Labour Party get, they can't even remember quite often whether they're members of the Labour Party or the SDP.
Or the Liberals, and they join that.
Yeah. Or what Labour Party they're in.
But the media gives the deputy group plenty of publicity. But they realise that they're quite harmless, they all have to tell the truth. I mean, we've tried to resist the law, and we've taken the colourful left here.
Well, it's a difficult question, in the sense that by suggesting that, you pose this sort of very conspiratorial notion about the role of the Legion, and whether they're actually that united in actually putting forward certain groups and saying, yeah, they're all right because they're harmless. I'm not too sure myself. Certainly, the left wing are the sort of bogeymen of capitalism, and you can frighten people by talking about these left wing extremists operating in Britain. And it also gives the idea that it's really only a small minority of people that think like that, and they should be avoided like the plague. The Socialist Party, though, recently has been getting some publicity. You know, there's talk of us getting on the television, you're on the radio. Or we get onto LBC. So we've got to actually get out there ourselves and force our way into the media. But the media are not going to come along knocking at Clapham High Street and saying, you know, will you come on? We've got to actually get members out there getting into the BBC.
Sandy?
Although it's vetted.
I mean, there was a view in the party, you know, 10 years ago or so that, you know, you didn't want to bother with the media, broadcast media, because you weren't going to get on. Well, of course, some pretty active members, particularly in London, but in other parts of the country as well, have proved that they can get on to local radio, first of all through the basis of phone-ins, you know, just making comments of various kinds on issues that are dealt with in the phone-in programmes. And this, in fact, has laid the basis for other activities. You know, we've actually had people representing the party's case on the LBC two or three times over the past few years. So, I mean, that's something to be said about. I think myself that the next nut to crack, as it were, is definitely the BBC. Mm-hmm. We definitely have to try and establish some sort of presence in the BBC. It's very difficult, of course, because the BBC is probably hidebound by a lot of regulations apart from anything else. I mean, despite the fact that we have been in existence for you know, upwards of 8 years, we as an organisation couldn't have a case or whatever. I've not been, as far as I know, not once represented on you know, BBC programmes, whether they were about Marxism or whatever. And, you know, this is something which has got to be continually attended to, however long it might take. I think that certainly members of our organisation have been on a question time programme, but, you know, of course, the impact you can make on that is very chancy. And I think that the BBC have continually got to be approached in various ways. You know, there are all sorts of ways you can do it. But I think what party members have got to remember is that the BBC aren't going to be impressed by sort of a totally angry sort of you know, offended reaction to say a programme which deals with the ideas of Marx and as we would say, the stock of it. But the task of actually approaching this is got one which has got to be thought about very seriously. I mean, sort of kind of look forward to the day when we might even be one of the major contributors in some of the program about socialism or the ideas of Marx and Engels or whatever. It's something which I think we could be able to do it once on national radio. And I think radio is particularly good because it's a medium which allows the audience to have more intelligent participation, I think. It's a pity that it's a minority audience that listens to, well, Radio 4 and stations like that, for example. But I think that it's certainly a very important medium. But we ought also to think about television, because that is really a mass medium in a way which radio isn't managed to be. And if we could crack this particular nut, we'd have made some sort of step forward, because these media are national, as I've said, and you would get to more people at the one time than you do if you broadcast on LBC, big in all as London is.
Can you support all of those the comments that the last person's made? The media is the thing today that we must get involved with. I mean, it reaches and penetrates into 95% of all homes in the country or the world, if you're talking globally. And satellite television offers opportunities, cable TV offers opportunities for us to make our own videos and actually make some contact with the people because they're not coming to these meetings.
Yeah, I think Alan and Cam touched on something that Steve mentioned earlier on, which I'd be interested in knowing if it's actually a fact on. And he said that probably not. Members of the sort of left wing, as it were, stay in their organisation and get this affection after about 5 years. I actually think it must be about 5 months. I'm not actually, you know, I wouldn't place my bets on it with this. You know, some people stay 5 years. I mean, I was just looking at how long I've been in the Socialist Party of Great Britain, and that's about 3 years. And I think that some people I know who have actually been in somewhere like the SWP are only in their organisation for a very short period of time, and then as Steve says, they become disaffectionate Labour Party supporters and they actually vote Labour and so on and so forth. And someone was saying, I think it was Cliff over there, was saying, you know, how do you approach these people? Well, I think the best way to approach these people is to get them and say, I'm in the SPGB, the Socialist Party of Great Britain. And I think that it gives them something to chew over, because I'm sure at the end, of their, when they become frustrated after running around all sorts of issues, I mean, this week it's in South Africa. I think last week it must be the teachers or the railway men, and before that was the miners all last year. I mean, they must be,
Racist council working.
Oh, racist council working in Islington and all that sort of thing, yeah. So I think that, from my point of view, I don't enjoy speaking to all these left-wingers. You know, they are hostile, to me, not me personally, but to socialist ideas, or they've never heard of them, let's put it that way. So I think that, just to leave in their minds that the SPGB is in existence, mentioned the fact that, we want to follow the wages system, and that's a good thing, because, I've actually been placed in the place they are. Abolish the wages system, and they're going to a bloody trade union meeting and they're supporting the railway workers or something.
So. Oh, yeah. And the other thing is that what they're actually doing inside these meetings, for example, the Labour Party, I know in the area where I live, they've certainly become disillusioned with the democratic procedures that are operating in the local branch, because they're refusing to debate with the party, they're refusing to discuss the question about socialism, and this is a decision taken by their leadership, not by the members. The members are quite keen to hear about socialism. The other thing is we've had people come along to our meetings and say, well, what you do is sit around talking, but if you go to a Labour Party meeting, as a friend of mine did recently, they sat around the whole evening plotting where to actually put a car park in Guildford. That was that night's socialist activity dealt with. So,
that raises a point there. How would we in our trade unions even react to a situation where there's a racist housing official on the council discriminates against coloured applicants for housing? Now, what they've done, or what the NALGO, am I right, Frank, are saying is they want this worker sacked. And anybody who holds these views should be sacked. Yet I would say, I've thought about this a bit, that these people shouldn't be sacked. And I think Islington Council, for a change, have been pretty sensible about this. They've removed, although they haven't been that sensible, they've removed the housing...
Make your mind up.
they're removing the administrator from working in the housing section to another part, but they're still dealing with the public. Now, what I would like to see is the administrator removed from dealing with the public, but sent on a racialism awareness course.
Who's going to conduct that? it's certainly not going to be the council itself, because what operates is sort of institutionalised racism anyway. It permeates all these organisations. It's just undercover and it's done more politely. But, as far as I'm concerned, a bastard like that deserves what he gets, and I don't really care.
Oh, Bradley, you resolve the situation.
If he gets the sack,
I think these, racism awareness courses are a good thing. But of course, they're a stepping stone to socialism. But we shouldn't isolate ourselves. That's what I wouldn't advocate sacking this worker. Because, it's not their fault in the majority of cases that they've become racist. They've become racist through their environmental circumstances out of their control. The people they're mixed with. Very decent people are all of them.
This argument, some of our best friends are racist. I don't know. It becomes a bit like saying, I suppose, that anything that working people do, you know, you must actually stand back and sort of say it's okay. And I think there are things that people in the working class do that you must actually stand up and say, you know, that's wrong, and reject it. And in that particular case, obviously capitalism produces racism, or it's partly responsible for producing racist ideas in people, and as an organisation, we make that very well known. But individually, when people are operating these racist policies in their work, well, you know, personally, and this is my view, not the Socialist Party view, I don't give a damn if they get sacked.
Steve Thurman?
Good question. Special selection. You see, why are they racist workers? Are you going to sack nationalist workers? I mean, a racist on the whole is a very frustrated, impotent, stupid, frightened person. But a nationalist, for example, is someone who would say, I want my son to go out and fight in the army and kill people. In other words, you know, nationalists do what racists only talk about. Yet, right, nationalism is a very acceptable policy. In fact, you could be, I would remind those of you who don't know that after the First World War and the Second World War, members of this party who refused to fight were banned from holding trade union office, because the trade union said anyone who hadn't been a patriotic nationalist during the war wasn't allowed to take trade union office. Members of this party, like Hardy, who the speaker referred to, who wouldn't fight in the First World War, lost his voting right. He was not allowed to vote until very recently, when the law was changed, only a matter of a few years ago, because every conscientious objector in the First World War was disenfranchised. He didn't get a vote. So that was something else that happened, which, you know, these things are worth bearing in mind, aren't they? Now, the point about this now goes strike, Frank Morgan can possibly talk more about it, maybe not, you know. He has prints of stuff.
No, I believe it. Just hear about it, that's all.
But the thing I would point out is, you've got to realise that the left-wing tacticians are the, you know, if you talk to the left, these are masters of tactics. You know what I mean? They're like the people sitting next to the boxing ring, who always know how to win the fight, but they're never actually in the ring. You know, they're the ones who say, you know, what you should have done. Well, you know, what you should have done. If you would have punched him on the nose then, you would have won the fight. Now, actually, the left wing are bloody awful tacticians. You know, their strategy is hopeless. I'll give you a very good example. We used to meet in a pub up the road called the Prince Albert. The Socialist Workers' Party used to meet in there before us, under a front of the pub called the Troops Out Movement. The Troops Out Movement included a lot of names which people like the Special Branch would have liked, not to mention all of the competing left-wing organisations. We went in that room one day and we found our entire membership list had been left on a table, which we subsequently confiscated and sent leaflets to them all. But the fact of the matter is, these people have no idea of tactics at all. Any of you are in trade unions, and people who tend to have the most romantic view about trade unions are people who aren't actually active in them. If you are in a trade union with leftists, leftists are always the most stupid people. You know, they will come up with these ideas like, you know, let's organise a procession, when they know there are only going to be about six people on it. Or look at what they did at North London Polytechnic with Patrick Harrington. Here you had a vicious fag who came into North London Polytechnic with the conscious intention of causing racial disharmony. Patrick Harrington could have easily been expelled from North London Polytechnic. The governors of the Polytechnic would have wanted him out. The Ministry of Education would have wanted him out. The National Union of Students would have wanted him out. But the Socialist Workers' Party, in their eagerness and stupidity for wanting to be the leaders of the Students' Union there, they preempted Patrick Harrington even doing anything. Patrick Harrington wasn't even given the chance to put a foot wrong. These fools got him before they even had a good case against him. And as a result, they lost the sympathy of large numbers of students and lecturers in that polytechnic, because they were simply picking on the wrong man. Again, with this Nowgo person in Islington, you know, by all means, there are plenty of ways that workers can make other workers feel uncomfortable. We all know this. If you are working beside a racist worker and you've got a good trade union, and when I say a racist worker, I mean someone who really being offensive all the time to black people and making it unpleasant for them to work there. You can ostracize them. You can make it known that when anything's on, they're not included. You can do all sorts of things if you're properly organized. But the thing you've got to realize about the left is that they are the best people at talking about organization and the worst people at practicing organization. Their tactics are hopeless. So remember that, because you'll go along to left-wing meetings and you'll always hear them talk about what they organize. Whenever the left arrive on the scene, you can be absolutely certain that things are going to go wrong. For example, I'll just give you one example. In Neasden, at the Charrington Coalite Depot, where during the miners' strike, you had a picket line. And that picket line was a peaceful picket line, which I was part of. Not a single lorry went through that picket line for the first 6 months of the miners' strike. Every lorry that came along, just as picket lines ought to be, we stopped them, wound down the window. Either one of the Kent NUM people who were down there or one of the local people like myself would go up saying, sorry, you really oughtn't to go in there. There's a strike on, you know. You'll be breaking through a picket line. You wouldn't want to do that as a trade unionist. Every single one of them said, fair enough. I don't want to cross a picket line. They went away. The Trotskyists arrived on the scene. Up until then, you'd had three policemen. Every lorry driver wouldn't cross. As soon as the Trotskyists arrived on the scene, Kent National Union of Mine Workers had to pass a resolution asking them not to come anymore. You've got about 30 police having to be there at the depot because these people wanted to have a fight because, you know, their local branch would have looked pretty bad. They need to get their names in socialist work and say 20 of us were arrested. You've got to remember, during the Brunswick strike, the SWP was actually handing out leaflets outside Brunswick saying 75% of our membership has been arrested. You know, this is something that they were very proud of, and the 25% had to go and report back to the branch about why they got away with it. Because if you hadn't been beaten up in the back of a police van, it was a bit of a, you know, you weren't a revolutionary hero. So the fact of the matter is, when these people arrive on the scene, it spells trouble for the working class. However bad the right-wing leaders of the TNG, you know, the good old-fashioned trade unionists who support the wages system, they're nationalists, they're usually racists, they're usually totally out of touch with any kind of idea of social revolution. They're 100% better than the Trotskyists, because at least they know their limitations. All they do is stand there and go through the ritual of defending themselves against the boot of capitalism. As soon as the Trotskyists arrive on the scene, the boot of capitalism hits them twice as hard because the Trotskyists invited it. They got no idea at all how to organise.
The Communist Party, their history is littered with examples like that, but one of the things that stuck in my mind is that one of their tactics was they sent a notification round to a branch, I think it was in Burnley, that they should have a mass demonstration down to the local barracks. You know, I had a chat with the soldiers there, which included two mistakes. One, this sort of, that the branch was, there was about six people in the branch, so it wasn't going to be a mass meeting. The other thing, that there wasn't actually any barracks up there at all.
Well, we've got about 10 minutes left, so I would ask that two gents want to have a last word. Perhaps if you could try and curtail your comments, and I'll then ask Brian to sum up in the 5 minutes remaining. So, okay, can take the gent at the very far back next to the window first.
Yes, thank you. As I see it, in the political camp, there is this main division between us and other different parties. There, all these working class leaders are intent on getting votes. It doesn't matter what issue it is, as long as it's some issue which will attract as many votes as possible, and they'll hope to get a seat in the House of Commons. See, if we, at the next election, if we went out and told everybody we are going to abolish VAT, some popular reform, regardless of what the common market thought about, we were going to abolish VAT. This would boost employment and build houses and solve a lot of the crime and all that sort of thing. We'd get lots and lots of votes, and we'd probably get
Steve a seat in the House of Commons. But we wouldn't be an Eton Club forward. As far as socialism is concerned, we would be standing still. So this is the main difference, as I see it, between us and other political parties. Our intention is to establish socialism. Without socialism, we don't get rid of war, which is the main cause of... It doesn't matter what reform and what problem you solve. If you haven't solved the problem of war, you haven't solved anything. And that is the main difference between us and other political parties.
Gents in the corner.
Well, some time now we waste a lot of time talking about other organizations, you know. We say they are like this, and we say they are like that. At the same time, you know, we forgot about ourselves. We are as a political party, we are static, you know. We lack dynamism. We cannot, you know, agitate, you know, the working class or to do anything to save the case of socialism. Now, how can we now start to criticize ourselves? How can we now change ourselves, you know, from statism towards dynamism in order, you know, to contribute to something to the case of socialism? Now, how can we do that?
I'm not so sure. Too sure about the last point. This lack of dynamism in the Socialist Party. I don't think that's the case. It's certainly not the case with the members that I mix with. The members I mix with are extremely active, and they're continually putting forward the socialist case, getting involved in selling the socialist standard, getting involved in meetings, doing all sorts of things. A small section of the party is like that, and in a small party like the Socialist Party, then that can become a bit of a problem. But I think that's really an old problem with the party, and we're getting new people coming into the party now, and things are beginning to change, things are beginning to look better. Because the party is made up of the people that are in it. You know, there's nothing that confines us to being static, it's the members we've got. And I think things are going to be on the up.